Okay, Abba Isai, so just before, no more than half an hour ago, no, probably an hour ago, I saw the following story. Do you remember the blood? That's it? Okay, so we're going to look at it shortly, Mitzchem. Keep it open.
Tannic acid.
Yeah, that's what we want to look at.
Tannic acid is taken out of the nut, and then the tannic acid dies.
Yes, exactly. Mefits, and we're going to get to that. Keep it open. Should be a picture of that as well. I think I saw a picture on it. Was there a picture of it? Okay, Rabbi Isai, I saw earlier a story, there was this blood libels throughout many, many years, and there was blood libels on the Eden, blood libels, one of the latest blood libels, in other words, one of the most recent, not the most recent, but one of the most recent blood libels was Mendel Baylis in 1911. Have you heard of it? Terrible accusation on him. Blood libels, and he was sent to prison and everything. Eventually, he was after many years in prison and in difficulty, he was let free. He moved to America, and he was the last years of his life. He was a free man. He was accused of having killed a young Jewish boy or girl. I think a Jewish boy, of Goyish boy, and which was of course untrue. And he needed that blood for whatever the accusation was for the matzahs. It was of course utter and complete untruth, but it was, you know, the Semitic situation was bad enough to believe it and whatever. So in the trial there was the accusing parties said that yes, that, you know, the Torah says that you gotta do it, and the proof of that is one of the proofs that the accusing the prosecutors brought forward was that it says. The pasuk says that you are called Adam, the Eden, you are called Adam, and but the goyim velo acherim, goyim are not considered Adam. That's what the Gemara dashes. Atem kuim Adam, velo acherim kuim Adam. So the prosecuting party said, well, from here we've got evidence that you, Eden, you consider yourselves Adam, i.e. humans, i.e. people, but anybody else, the Gentiles, are subhumans, they're not humans. And therefore, the rationale says that you can kill them for your matzahs and for your religious ceremonies. And so Gemara says, Atem kuim Adam, lachem kuim Adam. And it was a very strong accusation in this court case. And it was very hard to disprove that, because it is a Gemara. Apparently, a Meir Shapir was called in to bring they had any VIPs to try to help this Nebuchadnezzar, poor fellow, end up in prison. And they got a Meir Shapir, the Rosh Yeshiva of Lublin, famously the founder of Daf Yomi and one of the Gedolei Yisrael, who were very prominent amongst the goyim and political circles, very famous. A great activist as well, big Askin, and they brought him in here, and he was defending the case, and he said, "Gentlemen, I want to explain to you the Gemara. You're misunderstanding the Gemara. When it says Atem kuim v'lo achem kuim Adam, it's actually, have you noticed that Adam is in the singular? Adam is in singular. It's not in a plural. It's not plural. It's in singular. So what it's referring to is that Yidden, as a group, are considered Adam. Yidden as a people, as a nation, are considered Adam, because when one part of us is in pain, the other part of the, we're all one unit, one combined unit. That doesn't mean to exclude that goyim are not humans. It means that we are one unit of Adam. All the Jews are atem kuim Adam, v'ra'achem, the Gentiles are not one unit. There's many nations, many societies, many peoples, but the Yidden are considered atem kuim v'ra'achem kuim Adam. And that's the interpretation of the Gemara. It says, but us, when somebody's in pain, is put in jail for no justified reason, we're all hurt by that, and we're tremendously in pain because of that. And that's the interpretation of the Gemara. That's what he said. Apparently, it went a long way to getting him off the case. I just wanted to share that Gemara with you. But say, yesterday we discussed something. I wanted to show it to you in real life. We learned in Siman Lamed Beis, it says, Shel Rosh Yichtov Kol Echot Beklaf Levodah, we learned that when it comes to the Tefillin Shel Rosh, every parsha needs to be written in its own klaf, v'shel yad koisim kulam beklaf echo. When it comes to the Tefillin Shel Yad, it's got to be written in one klaf. Despite the fact that it's various parshas in various parts of the Torah, it's got to be written in one klaf. And this is how it looks. Rabbi said, this is real tefillin, real klaf. And if I may show it to you, it's going to be quite hard to see, but you'll get the gist of things. This is one klaf of Tfilin Shaliat, and you will notice, I hope it's clear enough, it's, they're all, as, look at the last words of the Mishnah Berurah in Sifkot and Vav. V'dah, the Tfilin Shaliat, tzorich liyos gam ken kosu v'davke ba'aba amudim kol pasha ba'amud echot. You will notice that these are all written, you've got four pashas, it's hard for me to show it because of the lack of a third hand. You can see one, so you can see four pashas, mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've written four different columns. Is columns the right word?
Sections,
yeah. So you can see that they're not concept. It's not one long pasha in the Torah. You can see, yeah. This is one is Kaddish called B'choya. There's Vayoki V'yocho after Shema Yisrael, and then after Zvoim Shemaya. And this is a and it's an example of how it's written in four. It's all one clap. It's written in one. So it's four different, as opposed to the Tfilin Shel Rosh, which is written on four different parchments. So this is the way it looks in our Tfilin Shel Yad. Okay, is that, do you want to see it closer? Or can you see it well enough? Yeah? Okay. You can also see what we discussed yesterday, the Dalet. You can see over here, the Dalet in Shema Yisrael is a bit bigger. So we discussed yesterday that it's got to have the size of four Dalet. I don't know if you can see it. Maybe worth looking at, passing it around. So yeah, so we learned yesterday that do you want to just pass around very, very carefully?
This is the Rosh. This is the Rosh.
Yeah.
The Rosh has four different pieces.
Yeah. So you'll see that the Dalet is bigger, but it's not four times the Dalet in it, because we learned yesterday that it doesn't have to have four Dalets of that particular size, of that particular cloth, need to fit in it, but it just needs to be, we learned yesterday. You need to have small Dalets being able to fit in it. And that's what we have got. Yeah.
This is possible, obviously.
What makes you think so?
We're holding it and passing it around.
No, it's not so posh that it's possible. It's a good club. There is a potentially a question in it, but yeah, do treat it with its due care. Yeah. Okay, so that's the purpose of Siv Beis. Should I proceed with Siv Gimel in the meantime? So, Siman Lamed Beis, Siv Gimel, Zazichtevim, Bidyoy Shochoy. The ink. So, what about the ink? So, the ink is, Yichtevim, Bidyoy Shochoy, it's got to be black. Contrary to most inks nowadays, the ink needs to be proper black, and it mustn't even have a bluish kind of... Yeah, it's got to be proper black, and you can see here, it's proper black. So b'dyoy shachar needs to be black ink. Bein sheish boi me'afetzim, bein sheloi boi me'afetzim. Whether it's got me'afetzim in it, or it doesn't have me'afetzim in it. What is me'afetzim? Whether it contains me'afetzim or not. So me'afetzim is... what is it's gold nut? What it is a kind of, yeah. Rabbi Yossi is going to read out the. I checked up the Wikipedia just to have clarity in it. So apparently, what it is, it's a kind of thing that grows out of oak trees. Can you just read that? What
the tannic acid?
Yeah. So there's a nut that grows on oak trees, which has a liquid coming out from that, very acidy, kind of black.
Tannic acid. Sorry, the specific term for tannin, a type of pulp spore. Its weak acidity is due to numerous phenol groups. Where does it come from? It comes from
oak trees.
It's the same way. It's quite a very long chemical formula. What's the chemical formula?
Careful, yeah. Please hold it with a lot of care.
Yeah. C76, H52, O46. That's a chemical thing.
Does that mean something to you?
Yeah?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Oak bark and leaves.
Yeah, so I've always said, is this on picture? Because I remember seeing a picture on it. It looks literally, it doesn't really look like a nut. It looks more like a... is that a picture? No, that's not what I saw. I saw it while... It doesn't look like a nut. It looks more like something growing out of a... That's what it is. It's the liquid emerging from that.
Is it a fruit from the tree?
Yes. The gold nuts juice.
Is it supposed to be in the ink or not?
No, so whether you put it in, whether that goes in or not, it's the dio is kosher. It's fine. Gula is kosher.
Gul mites. Gul mites.
Yeah, so the, no, I don't have gold mites. The reason why people, it's for technical reasons, somebody who creates that joy may want to put in it because it helps the substance. I want to add, I have no understanding in this, and I have no expertise whatsoever in this, but I do know that Sofim spent a great deal of time, money, expertise to create the joy. It is very, very difficult to get a joy, to write
you crush it with a mortar and pestle.
Composition, and it's got to be the right color, and not too liquidy, not too thick, and the right substance. It's really, really, really challenging. They work very, very hard on the joy. They will spend a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of expertise to get the joy right. So answering your question, this me'afetzim might be very. I'm not talking as from knowledge, but the way I understand is that people who had to add various ingredients. We're going to see other ingredients mentioned in shortly, and a reason why they want to add. You want to make the joy out of something which is the right substance, and various items were added, right, ingredients to make the joy the right composition. Let's look at more examples. Hold on a sec. Oshan etzim is also, Oshan etzim literally means the Oshan etzim literally means the smoke of wood, but it doesn't mean the smoke. It means when you have wood and you burn it, you've got some. Yeah, the ash kind of, which is also black, obviously, and you kind of crush that. That would also end up being, you know, nice ingredient for it's perfectly, beautifully black. That's what the Gemara says. You should rather use that rather than me'afetzim, which is kosher, as we mentioned, but rather use me'ashan etzim, which is good quality joy for the sofa. Or perhaps oils. Now, I don't exactly know how that works, but this is not the liquid emerging from the me'afetzim, but this is the oils which you put in the me'afetzim. I cannot exactly explain that. I don't know exactly what the difference is. I do not know what it is, but that is the oil as opposed to the liquid emerging, the juice emerging from the me'afetzim. This is the shmonim, the oils which you put the afetzim in it, and somehow these oils then also turn very black, and that's also something that person may want to use for the joy. I can understand from Mishneh Berurah, there's extensive discussion in the Bialoch and Mishneh Berurah what exactly the minig is. And as I mentioned, I do not know, it's not my area of expertise at all, but I do know, I've spoken to Sofim and they say they spend a lot of, it's very hard to get the joy right. And they use various ingredients, and I know that they share the skills and the knowledge how it gets right. So this is a machlokes rishonim. It's a machlokes rishonim, but the ma'aser we paskin that you can use as to whether it's a chatchila or not. That's a machlokes rishonim. I don't think the Mishnah Berurah paskins that, but one can use it. What is interesting as well is the Mishnah Berurah mentions that you don't need the lishma. You do not need the lishma in terms of the creation of the joy. What does that mean, ma'aser? We know when you write it, you got to have the right intentions. You need to do lishma. And but the creation of the joy, if you get the right ink, then to creation of the ink, you don't need to do lishma, which I know is an afkamina because the sofim sometimes, you know, it's not just the Yiddish sofim. There is still such a thing out there of calligraphy and other. There's also goyim who sometimes are specialist, skilled people who still use real ink. And if you want to use that ink, which is marketed and commercialized, could you use that kind of ink for writing of Safos? Not so long ago, Rabbi, say in our grandparents' times, that, you know, everybody used ink, black ink, for writing anything. It's not such a long time ago. Perhaps, you know, some of our parents still used it. And the question, can you use the ink, which was commercialized, could you use that for Safos? Now, I know they never did. Olam generally didn't do that. But the Mishnah Berurah says in terms of Lishma, it's not a problem. That's what Mishnah Berurah says over here. The ink doesn't have to be created for the sake of Safos. Can you see the last few words of Sivkot and Ches? Okay, we move on. What if you use gold? You want to make an extra fancy tefillin. Extra fancy tefillin. And using gold. Yeah, any color you put gold, it becomes possible. Obviously, it's got to be black. It's got to be pure black, undiluted black. And don't be fancy with using gold on your cloth. Now, what happens if you do the following? What happens if you sprinkle some golden sprinkles? Golden sprinkles on it. Yeah, you make it very fancy, shiny, shiny thing. So here the halacha is as follows. So you've got a black ink, and on top of that, some golden sprinkles on the letters. Mavi azov, you've got to remove the gold. Ve'ishak sabatachtoin, and the underneath layer remains black, that's okay. V'koshe, it remains kosher, but you must remove the gold on top. You must remove the gold, because it's got to be black and not gold. Aval, the problem is going to be, where's the problem going to be? Where is the problem of removing gold? Where is there going to be a problem? Where can you not remove the gold? Hashem's name. What happens if you sprinkle the gold very cleverly on Hashem's name? You cannot remove the gold from Hashem's name because you are moichig Hashem's name. Eloi takona. There's nothing you can do about it. She'osu le'avi azov. You cannot remove the gold, because it's as if you are removing Hashem's name. Note that it says over here, are you moichek the shame? Not really. What are you? So what are you saying? I think you're answering the question, and I haven't explained the question yet, but I think you're right. But the question is that, what does Shulchan Aruch say? Tava? By removing the gold, you are what? What's the word? What does that mean? You're like removing Hashem's name. Which implies that what? You're not really removing Hashem's name by removing the gold. You're like removing Hashem's name. So the question is, why not Moichik Hashem? I just took away a gold, Yud, K, Vav, K. Why am I not a Moichik Hashem? I surely am a Moichik Hashem. Why am I Kem Moichik Hashem? And the answer is, what did you say? I think you answered it. Very good. Says the Bialoch. Mishabut doesn't answer. Bialoch says, I think that's what you mean. That you're not really moichik because there's the underneath layer still remaining. You still got Hashem's name there. So what you basically did is you removed a layer, a covering, but Hashem's name is still there. So it's as if you're kum moichik, it's as if you're not properly moichik, but it's bad enough that you're not allowed to do that. And A, loy takona. So it's kind of a drabonon that if you've got golden sprinkles on Hashem's name, you are stuck. You are stuck. You can't do anything about this. I want to point out at this stage, by the way, it may or may not be the right place to mention that, but it's interesting that we talk about, it's very important to have a nice, hiddodiga klaf for the parshas that fill in. And it's people spend, not hundreds, but thousands of pounds of having good klaf for perfectly, perfectly good tefillin. And it's the question is, a lot of it has to do with why do we not get the stomach kosher one and we get a better quality one? What are we trying? Which mitzvah are we fulfilling by getting a better one? Why are we getting a better one? Why? Hidu mitzvah. It's a hidu mitzvah. Gemara says explicitly in Shabbos that Ezekiel Levan Vehu is not a fond of mitzvahs, and it's talking also about beautiful written parshas. So the question is. I understand when you buy yourself a obvious case of hidu mitzvah? Esek, yeah? Because it's very visible. I hear that. Very understand also why you want to get yourself a nice, very visible, what's another visible mitzvah? Sukkah, yeah? You want to get a nice mode of the, but when it comes to a nice klaf, who is going to, even you are not going to see it. It's nicely boxed in the tefillin and you cannot see it and you will never see it. And yet you're spending thousands, not virtually, very literally, you're spending thousands of pounds on nice parshas that nobody's ever going to see. This is rare. You don't normally see parshas. So what is that?
Because it's not a mitzvah.
Because it's not a...
It's to beautify the mitzvah. It's not for everyone to look at it and go, oh, that's the
mitzvah. Yeah,
you're wearing a more... put more effort into a mitzvah, right? And you're wearing it every single day.
Yeah, but he's snoy lefonov b'mitzvah. The Gemara says he's snoy lefonov. You're ultimately right. I'm just emphasizing the point over here. That he's snoy lefonov, he's talking about beauty. And beauty normally is something which is a visible thing. Beauty, by definition, is something which is beautiful mitzvah is something which is visible, right? Beauty is something which is visible. And here we're learning that actually, yes, it's visible, but it's not visible really. And yet that's what the Hiddur mitzvah is over here. And that's in the Mefurash in the Gemara. Pardon?
The beauty is not in the eye of the
beholder. So that's what we're learning over here. The Hiddur mitzvah is an integral part of the mitzvah, despite the fact that you cannot actually see it. Okay, the next halacha, Rabbi, so I want to quickly look at this. This is probably one of the most important halachas in the kashas of the klaf. Shloit dabek shum ois bechaverto. If Dada teaches us, you can't have one letter touching the next letter. Ella, rather, kol ois te mukefes gvil. This is the halacha of mukefes gvil. Mukefes gvil literally means mukef, means surrounded. Gvil means parchment, klaf. Gvil means klaf. So mukefes gvil means that every letter must be surrounded by a klaf, as opposed to surrounded by even a drop of ink. So every letter must be, there must be a word for it. I don't know the word for that. Every letter must be self-distinguishable. And more than distinguishable, it must be standing on its own without any connection to any other letter.
Freestanding,
that's it. Mukefes gvil means freestanding. That you cannot have any connection to a letter on top, to a letter in the bottom, right there. And Abayisai, it sounds very simple, of course, but because we're used to computer and text and digital, because automatically it's always going to be a space between it. But when you look in a Sefer Torah, it's very challenging. Because when you do the Endechav, or when you do the Lamed, you've got to make sure they don't hit each other and don't find. And it's a frequent problem. Because ink tends to run. And Mukefes Gvil is one of the most challenging halachas in Kashas of a Sefer Torah. And that's when you wanna when people are getting Naliyah and they are like and suddenly everybody stops and he points to something and everybody gets like all busy and everything, yeah. Mukefes Gvil, yeah. Do you know that? And everybody and then you ask a young child to check and see, it's normally Mukefes Gvil Shailas. It's very often that how do you suddenly, you can see that this over here, this endefei touches the lamed from the bottom thing, and it can touch a bit. And so you've got to check like this, and then he calls like and checks like this. Yes, are they touching? Are they not touching? Are they touching? That's mukhav gvil. That's mukhav gvil shailas. And they are more common than you'd expect.
Maybe raised.
Raised? Oh, that's another question. Can they or can they not? And that's the discussion. So we'll learn about that, Mitzvah. Yeah, at times you can, and at times you can't. Pardon? Yeah, so in a nutshell, if it's a letter without... I'm not going to go into that now. But if it's a kosher letter, even if you take it off, then it might not be a problem. But we'll get to that, Mitzvah. I want to quickly complete the Ramo if you manage. Ksivatam means that every letter needs to be written exactly according to its instructions, even the kotzer shel yud. That's an expression as well. In Lashon HaKodesh, we often use kotzer shel yud. What's kotzer shel yud? What's the kotzer shel yud? Well, we learn what the kotzer shel yud is. Yeah. So contrary to popular belief, the kotzer shel yud is, and that's really contrary to popular belief, the kotzer shel yud is the spitz at the end of the yud that goes up. And we'll be learning what the halachas of the kotzer shel yud is, but you've got to make sure that every yud got its kotz. Literally, the coat is a thorn, right? It's that thing at the end of the yud that goes up. So, the Ramah tells us, you've got to make sure every letter is accurate, precise, and concise, and even the yud got its coats. V'yumetuyak el-chosa, and there's halachas of, there should be metuyakim, crowned. Every letter that deserves a crown should have its crown. That will be discussed in later seifim. A little bit thicker. If it's too thin, it's going to get rubbed off and cracked off. So you make sure that it's quite thick. And you will see that the law of nice Sefer Torah, nice mezuzah, nice Sefer Torah, they go a bit thicker. You can see that it goes three-dimensionally up. And you should be miyapa the tefillin b'chutz mifnim. And here, I suppose, is the place I should be emphasizing about the mifnim. That tefillin should be mehuda mifnim internally, despite the fact that nobody is ever going to see it, besides us who just saw something. But generally, you'll never see how beautiful your tefillin internally they are. And yes, as you said.
Like to have to
like a car engine, like the inside, you never see the workings.
I suppose the difference is that by car engine, there is no hiddu, there's no point of being it nice. You want to be mechanically working well. But here, this is about the beauty of it. It's not just the fact that it's efficient, but it's got to be beautiful. Okay, Rabbi Yisrael, we learned this evening, Baruch Hashem, we covered a lot of ground. We spoke about the fact that the Tefillin Shel Rosh could be a one klaf, as we showed over here. Not four, like the Tefillin Shel Rosh, four boxed up in four different klaf, but it's in one long klaf, the four pashas. That's the Tefillin Shel Yad. We also spoke about the blackness of the dyoi, of the ink. We spoke about Mea Feitzim. Other ingredients are kosher. We spoke about other colors will invalidate the pashas, even if you mean good, you want to do it in gold, but it's going to invalidate the pashas. If you sprinkle gold on top of that, you got to erase it. Besides, when it comes to the name of Hashem, you cannot delete it, you cannot take it away, because it's kemoichig es Hashem. We mentioned why it's kemoichig and not moichig, probably because there's an underneath layer still. We also spoke about the loch of muk of gvil, make sure that every letter is self. What did you say? No. Freestanding. And we spoke about that every letter got to be written according to its own halachas, such as the kotza shel yud and the crown on top of the relevant letters. You've got to make sure they are quite thick and not erased quickly, as well as they should be beautifully inside and out. Good evening, Abbasai.